It's going on 5 o'clock on a fine afternoon. We have here in San Francisco the ongoing. There's an ongoing pepper spray trial back 6 or 8 years ago in Humboldt County. The Redwoods protesting against Charles Hurwitz decided to do a number of different sit-ins. I guess it was a logging blockade, as well as a sit-in in the Congressman Riggs' office, as well as another sit-in in the headquarters of Pacific Lumber. And this was the first time that the infamous pepper spray was used to break apart the people who had locked arms in the metal tubes. And with us today is Duff, one of the activists from from those days. And, yeah, speak up. Let's make sure your levels are good.
Well, first of all, there was a lot of protests going on for many, many years. And 1997, when these infamous events happened, it was during the height of a lot of protests going on. There were a lot of tree sits going on. There were a lot of blockades. A lot of different direct actions were being utilized to try and slow down the logging and bring attention to the issue. The government at the time was in negotiations with Charles Hurwitz. Dianne Feinstein was one of the main negotiators. And our congressman up in Humboldt at that time was a real slimeball named Frank Riggs. And we called him Rank Pigs, is sort of his nickname. But he was a full-on in the pocket of the timber industry. In fact, he was discovered to be the number one recipient of timber dollar contributions, campaign contributions.
Nationwide?
So, nationwide. He was the leading guy to accept money from timber companies for all of Congress and Senate. So he was actively in the pocket and lobbying on behalf of the timber industry. And he had a campaign slogan called Jobs First, sort of as a jab at Earth First, that was very active in the area. So these protests, that Earth First was the main organizing group for most of the direct actions. I was involved as a videographer doing independent media up there. And these protests happened in the climate of an escalation of both police brutality that had been going on for quite a while and escalation in mass direct action and civil disobedience.
Do I recall right, this was 86, was it, or 87?
97.
Or, excuse me, 97. Okay.
Yeah, now a big rally had happened in 95 and in 96, and then 97 promised to be even bigger than those years. So the cops really were trying to, like, crack down on the movement and like, do something about it.
Well, the reason this has come up today is in the federal courts here in San Francisco, the pepper spray plaintiffs, those who were affected, individually injured by these pepper spray.
Yeah, there's eight of them.
Yeah.
Pepper spray eight.
They've decided to sue the cops, sue the county, sue the individual cops and the forces and any number of other different entities for personal injuries and for civil rights violations. So,
well, yeah, it's mainly a civil rights lawsuit against the police for using excessive force. It's not a personal injury lawsuit. It's just saying that this is not acceptable. This is a violation of our personal rights, our right to, you know, not be brutalized by the police. That's a constitutional. It's a constitutional question. Is this excessive force?
Sure. So this is the camel's nose under Abu Ghraib, under the tent leading up to Abu Ghraib. This was the beginning
torture in the USA.
That's right. And the idea that the ramping up of various forms of torture. The Constitution prevents us from being from cruel and unusual punishment. Well, if they can change the definition of usual, and so it's very interesting. The trial's been going on actually for a week.
Yeah, it started last Tuesday, so tomorrow will be 1 week, and it's a really amazing, exciting court case. I mean, court isn't always the most exciting thing, but I think this one is really worth seeing because, I mean, they're showing the video in the courtroom, and just to see these squirmy cops up there on the stage and the lawyers for their side, they just have such a sliminess to them. I think it's really worth checking out. And whereas the activist side has, you know, they've got flowers in their hair and the bowl of flowers and ponytails, and everyone's just got this energy that is so much different than your. Yeah, I just can't believe a jury could sort of rule against us just seeing the looks in
much
people's
less.
Faces. And
yeah, Abu Ghraib is a reality now, and the jury seemed like just plain folk. It it's a the typical scam for federal jury selection is that they would pick jurors from the very conservative sections of the Bay. So Contra Costa County used to be the popular, and southern Alameda County used to be the popular place to pick white jurors who would be Republicans. And almost every civil rights personal injury case in the Ninth Circuit in Northern California, they were always picked from this strange pool over there rather than including. Oh, yeah, it's been a kind of a notorious, even though the Ninth Circuit is supposed to be the bastion of liberal behavior, it's still a stacked jury as that goes. Their pool predominantly comes from those zip codes out there. But so we're going to try to do these interviews on a daily basis, ideally, until the end of the trial, kind of a rundown on the daily events.
But really, people should go to the trial and check it out. 450 Golden Gate, the federal building. You got to go through a metal detector. You got to have a photo ID.
Took my shoes off.
Yeah, got to take your shoes off to get in there. It's a federal building, but it's very worth it. I think it's good for people to bring the kind of resistance attitude and energy, but make it lighthearted. Don't wear a, you know, kill the pigs t-shirt into court. It probably wouldn't help our cause much. But at the same time, go to the courtroom. It's a, what is it, floor 19, courtroom 10th, number 10.
Yeah, 10th
and the
courtroom.
The judge is Ilston, a woman judge named Ilston, I-L-L-S-T-O-N.
And now, one of the things that I sat in today that was, 10 o'clock to 2:30 or something like that, and kind of interesting, the person who was on the chair today, the witness of the day, was the cop that actually applied the Q-tip.
Yeah, Kirkpatrick.
Right. Now,
the
he
torturer
was,
himself.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Duff was mentioning, you know, the sliminess of these witnesses, and that their attorneys have this kind of a cocksure sliminess about them.
Arrogance.
Exactly. This guy came up and he was giving his CV, his resume, so to speak, of his life, and purported to be a recipient of an expert in chemical, the uses of chemicals on plaintiffs. And only one of the, I saw someone pop up from the audience, kind of hurry up to the front of the bench, carry a message up. And then after the discussion went on a little bit further, there was an objection from the good guys, our side, who asked, wait a second, when did you become an expert on this use of chemicals? Oh, and it turns out it was a few years after the application of the pepper in the eyes. So this guy was...
He became a trainer. He actually trained other cops how to use it and how to testify in court.
Sure.
And he admitted to doing
it. And I think it was only a 32-hour course that included 17 other subjects or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was,
They also brought up the fact that he hadn't personally been trained in pepper spray except for 5 years before the pepper spray incidents that are in the court case. So he hadn't been trained in it for 5 years. And then next thing you know, he's the torturer. And then a year later, without getting any further training, he's the trainer. So it's really like, you know, because he was the one who did the torturing.
Well, it's very similar to what the neocons are doing. They give themselves these titles. Here's a fellow at this institute, and it turns out that they were dishwashers in the high society cafe or something like that, and that's how they became such a... So in this case, he was on the witness stand today and giving his little rundown on the applications, and he gave this calmness about as if this was the only right thing to do. And even though I attended the first trial, which was 6 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Before Judge Vaughn Walker, one judge that you surely do not want to go before. I personally think he's probably an S&M freak. And no, I'm serious. I watched him. I already had contempt for him for 5 years before.
He's got a track record of very conservative right wing.
Not just conservative, but bizarre corporate. You know, corporate. I always suspected that he was one of those plant neocon plants in the Ninth Circuit, because he will always go toward the corporate state. He will not support small business. He will only support corporates. He will not support, you know, when you look at smuggling cases, when you look at, and I read a lot of his cases. You look up his you can look him up in Find Law and whatnot, and his cases invariably go toward the corporate state and toward lessening our civil rights. And unfortunately, the attorney then, or one of the attorneys, Tony Serra, had trust in him because he apparently had supported a number of hemp issues. He made a big mistake in thinking that Vaughn Walker was going to support civil rights. And Vaughn Walker did not allow the issues leading up to this sit-in to get admitted into evidence. And they were very important because many people think that it's a trial that involves saving trees, but it's also, in my mind, it's as much a case involving getting our money back from the infamous savings and loans crooks. And Charles Hurwitz is the ostensible owner of Pacific Lumber, or was, and he stole, he essentially had no money, and through stock manipulation of penny stocks, ended up with the ownership of Alcoa Aluminum. He looted Alcoa Aluminum's pension plans.
Kaiser Aluminum.
Was it Kaiser? Yeah, okay. And Kaiser Aluminum, also a huge corporation at the time, looted their pension fund, and then with that bought more companies, and he got
Pacific Lumber
in a huge buy of a company that owned many companies. And so he...
And then he raided the pension fund in Pacific Lumber as well.
Right. But what made it worse was every tree that was cut down was essentially owned by the U.S. government. This guy owed us because he was one of the famous savings and loans crooks.
Yep.
And he owed the U.S. government.
Him and Jeb Bush.
That's right.
They were some of the top three.
So if the government were to prosecute Charles Hurwitz, the total value of all of those corporations combined still would not deal with the amount that he had looted from the savings and loans. And so the cutting
down... Something
like
$1.7 billion.
Right, yeah. Something. And he was looting these companies and stashing the money overseas in every way he could possibly do. And he's one of... There were the top three savings and loans crooks, Ivan Boesky, Michael Milken, and Charles Hurwitz. And Hurwitz is the only one that the government was never willing to chase after. There's plenty of evidence to get him, and they would not.
He's a clever guy, and he's got really clever lawyers. Also, he apparently shared a penthouse apartment. There was an apartment complex, upper class apartment complex, and both he and George W. Owned penthouse apartments in the same building when Bush was still a pipsqueak. And,
was he a congressman before he was governor?
Bush was either governor or right before he was governor of Texas when Hurwitz and him were next door neighbors in this penthouse.
Those were the cocaine days. Maybe he was one of those flyers.
Hey, we got a clip from Fire in the Eyes, a video I did.
Oh, yeah.
I did this film a year after the Pepper Spray incident. It's 1998, and many people have seen it. It airs on Free Speech TV, and it's been around, floating around the activist scene for a while. We're trying to get it aired on the community radio stations and public access TV stations as much as possible this week. So if you know anyone who's got access to cable access TV, I encourage you to try and get a copy. And
not
get
just
it aired
here in San Francisco. So if you
all over the Bay Area,
you've got a cable show and you'd like to, a little over 30 minutes.
It's 32 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. So if you've
but
got,
you could trim off a little of the credits at the end, and when
you got a 28-minute show,
exactly.
Run it as a special. Get
you
practice,
could still you could even trim off a little at the beginning if you want, if you had to. But most cable access stations, you can squeeze in a little time.
What's time?
Anyway, we're going to do a little segment about the Frank Riggs, Rank Pigs, the congressman's office sit-in, which was the last sit-in of – well, it wasn't the last sit-in, but it was the last event of pepper spray. There were three events where kids were pepper sprayed in 97, which this lawsuit is about. Again, in 98, they did it again. And in court today, the cop lied, or he didn't remember correctly. He said it was all in 97, but really, another one was in a year later after Gypsy was killed. But we're going to show this segment. It's got a little bit of Kevin Bundy, who is an Environmental Protection Information Center activist from EPIC. It's got a little bit of Frank Riggs talking. And it goes back and forth between some people giving commentary and talking at a rally and the people sitting down and locking in. There's some music, and then people are walking in, sitting down, doing the lock-in. And then this alarm goes off. You hear the woman, the secretary inside Frank Riggs' office. She gets really angry, and she sets off the fire alarms. Weep, weep. So you hear this. And then there's some interesting edits back and forth between the discussion dialogue that goes on between the cops and the activists who are locked down.
So, all right, so we'll roll it.
Let's roll it.
Yeah, we're not going to do the whole 32 minutes.
No, we're going to do about 8 minutes, yeah. 7
all right,
or 8 minutes.
Good, yeah.
So here we go. This is from Fire in the Eyes, made by Earth Films Havoc.
That they announced, that they put out there and said was going to save this forest, this deal that rewards the irresponsible behavior, the fiscal and environmentally irresponsible behavior of Charles Hurwitz, John Campbell, Maxam Corporation, and Pacific Lumber Company, that we are still out here. Because this deal is a bad deal for Headwaters Forest, it's a bad deal for the salmon, it's a bad deal for Humboldt County.
All right,
on October the 16th, 1997, Earth First paid a surprise visit to the office of Frank Riggs in Eureka to protest his involvement in a backdoor deal with Charles Hurwitz and the government. Earth First brought Riggs a symbolic stump and a pile of sawdust.
Come on, let's line up.
I guess you're missing the visuals for this. The kids jumping out of the cars, carrying various the pieces for the
stump. Just rolling the stump.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
No deal. No compromise. No
compromise. That's the secretary doing the line. Spread sawdust all over the floor.
No,
there. And they're sitting around the stump in the left box with metal pipes. Wasn't this one of the rare times when the congressman finally showed up for work in his own district? So,
well, he didn't show up for this event. So either we thought he was going to be there, we planned on him being there, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Rich guy.
Yeah.
The American people,
here he is talking,
want government. I want to say this again. The American people want government to be on the side of the traditional family.
The divide.
And they don't believe the government should be questioning Judeo-Christian virtues and values, again, on which this country has been founded.
He's not representing the workers in this community, and that he's not really seeing the bigger picture about the future of jobs. He's looking at the short term about what's going to grease his pockets and all.
Frank Riggs, how can you say, I'm a Vietnam veteran, a war veteran, I suffered from torture and
sin.
What do you say about Christian values?
Okay.
All right.
This is private property.
Yes.
If you do not leave, you will be arrested for trespassing. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Will you voluntarily leave? Will you unbook and leave?
Please oppose torture in Humboldt County.
All right. I also have permission from the renter or the person in control of the property to have you arrested or arrest you for trespassing. Again, will you leave?
No.
Okay, if you do not leave, chemical agents will be used.
The people at my office were under arrest.
You brought attention to your cause. You go to jail the same. You just save a lot of damage to the carpet, to the wood chips, to yourselves.
and saved a lot of time when we get back and actually arrest some criminals.
You know, I think it's actually kind of, we have to make a stand that you can't use chemical weapons against the American public as torture technique.
Well, it's not a torture technique. It's the safest way for me to get this problem
resolved. That's not what they want. People have been killed using this.
Okay, well, you've been warned.
They were defying the lawful orders of sworn peace officers.
If we have to use cutting agents, you can start a fire, and that is definitely a threat to the public safety of the citizens of Durango, to yourself, to me, and to people in general. That's why we have to do this.
It's frightening. You know, some of the most beautiful people I know are standing up and putting themselves on the line because they really believe strongly that, you know, in the future, and that there should be these large trees in the future.
Violations of environmental law are a non-issue in this state. When Pacific Lumber Company goes out there and commits a misdemeanor by violating the forest practice rules, the cops aren't there with pepper spray.
Think of your daughters, you know, I mean, it's kind of a nasty reality.
Yeah. But when somebody shows up in Frank Riggs' office or Pacific Lumber Company or Bear Creek and commits a misdemeanor, the forces of the state are there with the chemical weapons.
Chemical agents are safer than permanent.
Law enforcement is defending corporate interests, and they're doing it at the behest of people like Frank Riggs.
They have been and were continuing to break the law.
They did break the law. That's what civil disobedience is.
And that is the uncontroversial truth.
Deputy, would you assist me, please?
You know, please don't. You didn't do it.
Does not make it right to torture them.
And you know, I keep wondering about the balance of things.
I'm telling you, you have the options here. If you fail to do release, I'm going to use chemical agents to try to get you off.
Well, we're going to fight it in court that it's not a right thing for people to be using chemical weapons on other people. You know, it's not right.
I'm not going to argue with you. I'm going to start this process.
What's your definition of torture?
I don't know. What's yours?
All right.
She's nonviolent. Well, you got to release. Well, you have the option to release.
Can I think about it?
No. You have about 10 seconds to think about it.
I would imagine that it must have some effect on the police as well from doing that.
It's one of these sayings, let's crack down on criminals, but we need to crack down on the police.
They had opened the door.
What you were given was a little bit of pepper spray with a Q-tip.
To let the people outside know.
What we're going to do now is an actual spray.
No. Understand this? Understand this? Yeah, I don't like it either.
Yeah, we don't
like
it either.
Understand this. You won't come out there one way or the other. You're going to be very uncomfortable. Or you can be comfortable.
Comfortable.
This is the safest way.
None of it is comfortable. 7,500 acres out of 60,000 is not comfortable. The trust of watersheds is not comfortable. You think that in the future when our kids are here, this is going to be comfortable? It's going to be a fucking desert.
I wasn't referring to that at all.
Okay, are you going to release? Who's going to release? Are you going to release? Are you going to release?
Let me go!
Are you going to release? Yes or no? I want to know now.
I haven't survived it yet.
You know, actually, my first instinct when I got sprayed was, oh my God, I don't want them to do this to my friends.
What are you going to do after this? You got to escalate it? Are you going to do like thumb screws or what?
I would do it again because we're going to have lockdown since, because it's just important, because once these forests are gone, that's it.
It's true that it violates the recommendation.
Okay, so that was the
it's very heavy
clip,
yeah,
from Frank Riggs' office. You couldn't see it. The images are pretty disturbing to see. These women getting first swabbed with a Q-tip across their eyes. And you hear the cop earlier spraying the pepper spray into a little Dixie cup. And they're like, hey, please don't. You don't have to do this. Trying to talk him out of it. And he's like, nope, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start this process. I'm not going to argue with you. But then they swab it with a Q-tip. And then about a half hour goes by, like I was just telling you, before they did the actual spray. And they were threatening the whole time, like, if you don't let go, the next time we're going to do a spray, full spray in your eye. And they during that whole half hour, roughly half hour, you know, no water was given. They were just allowed to sit there and suffer. And you really see them in the video squirming and shaking their head back and forth, and they're in a lot of pain.
But it was huge energy. I mean, when you think about it, they had Q-tipped them, and they sat with the pepper spray in their eyes for a good half an hour, just in enormous, like, power of solidarity. You know, just in the moment or two that we were watching them, you're seeing this, I don't want to say seething power, but it is huge. And you got to admire the activists for the endurance that they had, just silently enduring this, and the cops almost bored standing around.
Yeah, and I mean, they really were strong. These women were incredibly strong and brave.
One of them was 15 at the time, right?
16.
16, yeah.
Molly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that, and we, off air, I guess we were talking about this, and is it Fitzpatrick? Fitzgerald?
Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick. He.
Kirkpatrick,
right. He testifies from the from the witness box today that he did know that the application on the pepper spray says do not apply from less than 3 feet away.
Right. The manufacturer's guideline says do not spray from less than 3 feet. And he admitted in court to knowing that ahead of time.
Yeah.
And yet, sure enough, right there on the video, he's holding Terry Slonovitz's head right between
his crotch, right in his
in between his legs, holding her head and with one hand grabbing the back of her dreadlocks and the other hand spraying her an inch or 2 inches right there. In
fact, you see the bubbling on her face. Yeah, it's just so
so horrific.
Yeah, it's about the size of a dollar, you know, a silver dollar or something like that, this circle of white as it's foaming up right around her eyes. And so he says that he knew it was 3 feet. He did it from 1 foot, and the reality...
No, he said he testified that he...
He said that he sprayed it from 1 foot
from
away.
Foot. Yeah, well, that's a total lie, and the video shows
an inch.
One inch, you know?
Yeah, it's sick. And so if you get the time to come down and witness this, it's amazing. But it is very much tied to Abu Ghraib. They're setting new standards for cruel and unusual punishment. And, you know, we knew this with Pelican Bay. We knew this from the shoes and the whole variety of different prison industrial complex gizmos. In fact, there was testimony today, POST, Peace Officers Standards and Training, is a nonprofit that's based up in Sacramento. And by the title of their name, you would think that they give some standards and training. But one of the good things that came out of the Vaughn Walker version of this trial was that there was testimony. The defense in this case, the cops and whatnot, brought in a fellow from POST, and he described what the organization does. And he had to admit that POST does not particularly offer standards or training. And he then, in not so many words, went on to say that they're pretty much a chamber of commerce, that they just show the display of different unique gizmos and weapons and techniques and whatnot that are on the market. And so,
you're kidding.
No. If you look in the transcripts of the testimony from the guy from Post.
When was this? Last week?
No, in the Vaughn Walker.
Oh, the first round.
In the first round, right. And I kept notes of it. I'd have to look them up. But I was very... the guy made it sound virtually that this nonprofit Post does not provide standards and training. And in fact, testimony came up today to somewhat verify it. Kirkpatrick said that even though he got some class out of, I guess it was a pepper spray class a couple of years later out of Post, that didn't necessarily apply to Humboldt County because Humboldt County would set its own standards and that it would just be something that might be recommended by this Post agency. And and of course, as I said, this was some years even after the Vaughn Walker trial. So maybe Post is trying to remedy its reputation, but at the time... Post did not provide standards or training. Well, it's all locally set.
One thing they did is that Post writes up a guideline, you know, a paper that says, you know, basically they have the definitions of things like active resistance versus passive resistance and crowd control during civil disobedience or crowd control during, upheavals or riots. And so they have certain use of force, policy that it's up to individual departments to set their own policy. But this is sort of the California guidelines, and this is what we recommend or suggest. And it's written by cops mainly. The interesting thing was right after the pepper spray trial, the first round of it, when the lawsuit was first coming to court, in fact, before it even got to court under Vaughn Walker, the police officer standard training Post, and we think the Eureka police and the sheriffs from Humboldt County had a lot to do with this. They redefined the term active resistance because it used to be defined passive resistance as anyone who sort of involuntarily but goes limp but doesn't offer a fight. You know, and so from civil disobedience, you go limp, but you don't resist per se. You just go limp. So you non-cooperate. You don't non-concur. You don't do what the police says, but you're not struggling and fighting with the cops. Whereas
civil
active resistance was considered someone who's struggling with a cop.
Yeah. The definition actually of civil, meaning quiet and calm, civil disobedience. That's the nature of how Martin Luther King defined it.
So the previous definition of passive versus active resistance was such that use of force in pepper spray was one of those use of force was okay for anyone who is actively resisting. So if you're struggling with a cop, they can pepper spray you. They can beat you with a baton. They can use a level of force to subdue you and whatever level of force, including killing you if you continue to resist. But a passive resistor was not to be allowed. You can't billy club someone who's passively resisting. And same with a pepper spray. No one had ever said you can't do this, but in the Post training it said if it's passive resistance it didn't say anything about chemical agents. But they changed it before the trial and after the pepper spray incidents, but before it got to trial, they changed the Post guidelines to the definition of passive resistance basically became like, well, there really is no such thing as passive resistance because anyone who resists a police officer or doesn't do what you're told by a police officer is actively resisting, right? So these kids who wouldn't release from the lockboxes were actively resisting. And you hear the lawyer say that today. Well, they were actively resisting by not – complying, not unclipping, by keeping your arms inside these metal devices. They're saying that is active resistance, and therefore it's justified to use force, pain compliance on someone who's active resistance, even though they're totally passive. You can see in the video, the girls are just a threat to nobody, not going to harm a fly.
You know, as you mentioned that, it raises the concept of the police union here in San Francisco is known for many years, since we've had demonstrations for a century, really, down here, that the police officers union knows that you get overtime when there's action. and you don't get overtime when there's normal duty. So, for example, 10, 12 years ago, we were having famous Food Not Bombs riots. One time there were 52 arrests. There must have been hundreds of cops here at Civic Center. And there was a shooting at Mission High School. Not one cop showed up for the shooting because they were all getting overtime trying to stop soup. So civil to redefine civil disobedience to become an action is it's virtually like Bush creating a version of terrorism, you know, out of someone who takes off smelly socks and they're declared as a biohazard. You know, it's you know, this kind of you know, standing up for your civil rights becomes an act of terrorism. So as today, when I had to go into the federal building, I had to take off my shoes. And, you know, in order to go into my own building that I helped pay for on tax day, they're telling me that I can't visit my own building without taking off my shoes. Well, if I thought it was a Japanese temple and I admired it for it, I'd be glad to. But to be ordered to take off my shoes in order to visit my own building.
Well, my friend from England is here in the United States on a tourist visa, and she wanted to come to the trial today. But she didn't bring her passport. She just brought her British driver's license because it said you need a photo ID. Well, her driver's license is a photo ID. It's a valid identification, you know. But they wouldn't let her in the building. They said, no, British driver's licenses aren't okay. Now, if she'd shown her a driver's license from Wisconsin, that would have been fine. So it's this real nationalistic prejudice. Anyone from outside of America is immediately suspect.
Right.
And because you don't have your passport on you, you can't come inside our government building. Even though you have a driver's license, it's not valid. And the guy at the door was like, well, this isn't a valid driver's license in America. You can't drive in this. You need a California or international driver's license to drive here. And it's like, well, she's not driving. She's just wanting to step foot inside a federal building and go to a courtroom.
Right. And of course, the Constitution says that we have the right to public trials. Yet if the public cannot be allowed in if they haven't carried an ID, for many years, the Supreme Court felt that there was no ability for the country to demand a national ID. And as a matter of fact, just in the last few weeks, during the Terri Schiavo hoopla, the Republicans were trying to push the national ID, and they were covering it up with the Terri Schiavo business. Luckily enough, there were a number of neocons who also opposed and a lot of very staunch right-wingers that were keeping track of this, and they kept just enough of the Republicans off balance to defy that vote. But they're still pushing for a national ID. And the idea that you cannot use your own property is a violation of taxation with representation, that you cannot visit your congressman. You cannot visit various offices unless you're carrying ID. And that's it's a violation of your taxation with representation social contract, of the social contract.
It enhances their fascist system, which is what they're really after. They want to increase their control.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So let's see. I'm trying to think. We went through Kirkpatrick, and then the final witness that I saw was
Philp.
Yeah,
he's the current sheriff. He was the deputy, chief deputy at the time, and it was interesting that he testified. Dennis Cunningham did a great job of questioning him, and basically said, Dennis Cummings said, you know, basically this was your idea, and Dennis Lewis, who was the sheriff at the time, who was in court today, this was the two of you's idea, and he was trying to backpedal and say, well, it was the sheriff's decision, and I didn't dispute it, was how he kept saying. But really, Philp is like credited as the one who sort of came up with the idea, or at least did all this research into pepper spray to see if it would be a valid tool, and came up with all this indication that sure, this would work, and there doesn't seem to be any law against it, so why not? But anyway, so he, the deputy sheriff Philp, and the previous sheriff Dennis Lewis, Phil basically admitted that they were the ones responsible for the decision to pepper spray, to use pepper spray. So that's very important that he actually admitted that, because they are standing trials because of that. Because they weren't the ones who physically put the pepper spray in the eyes,
yeah,
but they were in the top of the command line, the chain of command. They were the ones who decided ahead of time, before it was ever used, that this is an okay thing to do, and that yes, we will indeed try this and let's see how it works. Kind of.
Yeah, it's an ugly scene, and so Humboldt County is not a rich county, and I guess this decision not to go after financial damages, but to make sure that this is a precedent in the federal courts is going to go a long way toward the Abu Ghraib issue.
You should mention this from Attica to Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, absolutely. That actually is coming up at the end of this week.
It's an organizing conference on human rights, torture, and resistance, sponsored by the International Human Rights Initiative. It's Friday, April 22nd from 6 to 9.
Yeah, we've got Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney coming up.
St. Joseph Friday. The Worker Church in Berkeley, 1640 Addison Street, Berkeley. And then there was a working conference the next day, Saturday, April 23rd, 8:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Berkeley, Dwinnell Hall. So a two-day or a night and the next day, Friday, Saturday, the 22nd and 23rd of April, from Attica to Abu Ghraib.
Organizing conference on human rights, torture, and resistance.
Yeah, and there's a website, Attica to Abu
the numeral,
Ghraib.
Yeah.
Attica, letter or number two, Abughraib, if you don't know spelling.
And that's .com. Okay.
And phone number is 415-273-4608. So, if you're a human rights activist or any type of activist, you should be concerned with human rights, or any type of citizen. You don't even have to be an activist. But go check this out. This is really important. And we need to, stop torture, not only in America, but everywhere. Americans are getting a horrible reputation for being torturers in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo.
Stock market wouldn't be falling if we weren't if our reputation wasn't on the line.
And all over South America too. I just came back from South America. I was down there for almost 3 months in Ecuador, Peru, and Brazil, and working on a documentary about the oil drilling down there, because the oil companies are going ballistic in the deep Amazon rainforest. They're going in, punching new roads, new pipelines, new oil drilling, going for the last bits of oil that are left. And there's a lot of oil still in the Amazon. So people know about what's happening in the Middle East as far as oil, but they don't realize that South America is the president of Ecuador just suspended the Supreme Court of Ecuador this past week. There's potential for absolute mayhem and rioting going on this week right now in Quito, the capital of Ecuador. So things are really heating up down in South America, and it's very little you're going to hear on the mainstream corporate news. So if you're interested in it, you can go to the Ecuador Indie Media site find out about that. Of course, Venezuela is like the number three in oil production in the world after Iraq, I think. And Chavez, the socialist-leaning president down there, is he's afraid the U.S. is going to knock him off. He's actively, putting it out there that he's feeling that they're drawing assassination attempts on him, or are about to.
Sure, much less. I sometimes hesitate to get caught up in the phrasing of whether it's socialist or Marxist or anything else, even capitalist, because if someone's cheating you, you've got an honest or an out and out con artist like Bush. He's a criminal, just outright criminal. He dreams up his fake institutions to give him fake legitimacy, and then he steals things right in front of your face and uses the police to make sure that he gets away. So the monikers of capitalism, communism, or socialism mean nothing to anybody that's trying to defend their own. And in the case of Hugo Chavez, they're trying to get an honest price for their oil, and Bush and his cadre don't want to give it. And so when Chavez says, no, well, we'll keep the oil, we don't need to sell it now. So it's, he's got plenty of support from the middle class out there under that angle of it. And it's simply a matter of whether or not the upper echelon, who are, I shouldn't even call it the upper echelon, because they're the scum of the scum, who are putting together the death squads out there. So,
yeah.
I mean, we've got the opportunity to go solar, go alternative energy, dump this whole oil regime, and create a new economy.
Well, we need to do it sooner than later because it's getting really ugly out there.
Yeah.
I mean, and America's getting such a bad reputation. I mean, it's really kind of embarrassing being an American and traveling around in South America. It's like you really don't feel like telling people you're an American because very few people like Americans anymore. And with good reason. I mean, America, it's a shame for people like myself who's not, you know, I'm an activist, so I don't, you know, I don't wear an American flag on my fucking, you know, clothes or, you know, I hate, you know, I'm more likely to burn an American flag than to wear one. But in South America, you know, people is, oh, you're an American, huh? And it's like, yeah, but I hate Bush. And, you know, then they're like, oh, okay, you might be cool then.
But well, yeah, I'll tell you what. If we'd surely like to do another update tomorrow and throughout the rest of the possibly going into 2 weeks.
I got to run, and I'm not going to be. Yeah, able if we to can get tomorrow, some other, but I'll try and hook you.
Yeah, that'd
else.
Be great.
Try and get some of the plaintiffs to come in, or at least call in, give you an update.
We look forward to it, and keep your ears out. I guess case ends tomorrow at 1:30.
Well, the case doesn't end tomorrow.
No, I know. It gets out of court. Sessions usually end
1:32. I don't know.
Yeah, so exactly. Sometime after 3 o'clock tomorrow, give a listen.
If you want to go to, we really encourage people to go sit in the court. It's 9:30 at the Federal Building, 450 Golden Gate, right block up from the Civic Center.
19th floor, courtroom 10.
Yep, between Polk and Larkin. Support this trial. It's really important for all our human rights to not let these cops get away with this form of torture. And we really need to roll back their ability to do that because they're just, you know, abusing it like crazy. And we need to support environmental activists and all types of activists who are willing to put their life on the line for what they believe.
All right. Well, thank you, Duff, for being here.
And, thank you, Devin.
And, we'll see you tomorrow.
Right on. Take care.
Or see the next interview.